This is Kevin Conroy, and you're listening to The Drift Space.
Initiating neural magic in 3, 2, 1.
I guess 10 seconds are up.
But you know, 10 seconds, 10 minutes, whatever.
No, that's what it is. You know what I was watching while I was working today?
What's that?
Or at least I had on. I couldn't really pay attention to it as much as I wanted to. I really should just sit down and watch them. You know the original Conan movies with Arnold Schwarzenegger?
With Schwarzenegger?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, those movies rock, man.
Absolutely. What is best in life?
I
man, it's been a hot minute since I've seen those.
Sword and sorcery movies were so much more interesting before CG.
They really were.
I mean, God, like all the sets and the crazy like monster costumes and makeup and stuff like that. I was like, man, this looks like something just like different. If it were made today, it would just be too, I don't know, too flashy, too.
Yeah, like when I think of old, like Conan's a great example, but when I think of old sword and sorcery movies, I think of Army of Darkness.
Yeah, was kind of a throwback. Or, okay, here's another one. Here's another one. Beastmaster.
Oh my god!
Right? Where he could talk to like a panther and a hawk and these two ferrets.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
Those were great, and like they made three of them. There was Beastmaster, and then two and three, and the other two they haven't even been released on DVD. Like just kind of forgotten.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I was a huge fan of those. Man, those were great. Anyway, welcome to a bonus episode of The Drift Space, you guys. May or may not have noticed, we did not release an episode last week. We were just too busy. We couldn't get everyone together. So we're going to release a regularly scheduled episode along with this bonus episode here. And the topic is going to be Ultraman Geed.
Yeah. Actually.
So this is Ultraman Geed is one of the more recent Ultraman series. Came out in 2017. It is the 27th Ultraman series. There's a lot of lore behind this one. It really helps to have seen specific movies before this one. But I think you can definitely enjoy it without having seen all of that. It's just that the Ultraman universe is so expansive, it really kind of adds to the stakes if you've seen some prior Ultraman movies with certain characters that the show has. And JR, this was it wasn't your first Ultraman series, was it?
Well, I mean, if you want to get technical, it was.
Yeah. Okay.
I followed the Netflix version of Ultraman for a while.
Oh, right.
And then you got me this for my birthday, which as soon as I popped in, I just, not even the first episode was over. And I was like, I'm in love with this character.
Mm-hmm.
So
One of the things that made me want to start with this one for you is that it was the lead showrunner, lead director of this series is Koichi Sakamoto. And Sakamoto he's really an international stuntman choreographer. He actually was had some minor roles in stuff like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 and 3. He was a stunt coordinator on stuff like Beverly Hills Ninja. But he's really known for...
Is it sad that I see that now?
He's really known for stuff from Power Rangers.
Okay.
You know, I want to say he got his start with Power Rangers Lost Galaxy, but I really think he started directing with Power Rangers in Space. At least he was part of the stunt, you know, coordinator by then.
Now, are we talking? And, are we talking about like American? No, well,
no. I mean, I'm Power stupid. Rangers.
We're talking Super Sentai.
No, Power Rangers. Not now. He did end up doing Super Sentai.
Okay.
But no, Power Rangers by far. And he was also the showrunner, our favorite Super Sentai, at least my favorite Super Sentai, Kia Rouger.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Oh, that's an episode onto itself. Okay.
Okay. We'll go back. And he directed the movie, Kia Rouger versus the Go Busters.
Yeah.
And he directed other episodes of Ultraman. He wasn't the showrunner of them, but he directed episodes of Ultraman Ginga and Ginga S, Ultraman X. He's directed some Kamen Rider as well. And overall, I love Sakamoto. Yeah. His stuff is always just balls to the wall action. Very explosive. He loves his explosions, literally. He has a great sense of style. He works the camera beautifully. I think a lot of people underrate his material in Ultraman, but it really does work for him, or he's made it work for him. And Ultraman Gede, I believe, is the first Ultraman show that he's been given the showrunner status. And he's actually going to be the showrunner for the next Ultraman coming out called Ultraman Trigger.
Oh yeah, I've seen. Yeah, you've seen trailers of that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it should be out soon, very soon actually. But he's directing the first episode and probably the second episode, and I'm looking forward to that because I really appreciate Sakamoto.
And most likely the rest of the series.
Well, no, I mean, like, yeah. But the important episodes, you know, like here in Ultraman Gede, he directed the first two episodes here.
Oh, it definitely in the first episode.
Nope. I'm sorry. He directed the first four episodes.
I was going to say the first episode of Gede. If you ask me what my favorite like tokusatsu scene out of like everything I've seen would be, it would definitely be the first appearance of Gede. By far. That is just the way he choreographed the fight around the water and all that is just, oh, mwah.
You know, when I first watched the premiere episode years ago, I wasn't sure what to think of the fact that they're basically, you know, having a battle in this like little lake fountain in Tokyo. But I kind of liked it. I kind of liked how brave it was because quite frankly, like, water sequences are very hard to pull off in tokusatsu.
Mm-hmm.
They never, you know, it kind of takes you out of the sense of weight due to, you know, the size of the water and the droplets and stuff like that. It's just hard to make it look convincing. But it really added to the whole nighttime battle and the lighting around them.
Yeah.
I think it really, I feel like the nighttime stuff really fits the Gede design best.
Well, I mean, if you want to, we'll get into it, but the whole like Gede concept is just, it. Like, this is one question I want to bring up later for you, but
okay.
The adverting expectations kind of thing. Like, you know, Belial is known for almost destroying the universe, and then you're like, oh, Gede is his son. How am I going to come out of this dark pit of my father? So, like, the grace and the elegance of that first scene of him, like, just moving and learning to become a superhero is mm-hmm. beautiful. And I love the way you're talking about the water and how he, like the droplets, like fling off of him as he's doing flips and stuff like that. It's just, oh, so good.
It's part of the artistry.
It really is. Artistry.
Yeah. All right. So I guess we'll get into this. We're going to do this sort of episode by episode. And the best way we've kind of just agreed to handle this bonus episode of the Drift Space is that, you know, we'll kind of copy the former hosts of the Kaiju Apostle knew their new podcast, Saved by the Belial, which if you haven't checked them out, you need to check them out. It's a great show. But we're going to go episode by episode. We're going to take the first five episodes here, the first disc on the Mill Creek set for Ultraman Jeed, and just discuss each episode. We won't have a color timer go off like Saved by the Belial, but we're we're kind of, I'm gonna be honest, we're kind of just throwing this together because we thought we needed to do this. We thought we've never missed putting out an episode before. This is a first for us. Things just got busy, but we have the time and the means to do kind of a mini episode with just two of us. And it's nice because, you know, Rebecca and JR, Rebecca and,
yes, Rebecca and me. Rebecca and me aren't very kaiju fans. That's why I'm here talking about
it. It's kind of
it.
Nice. It's kind of nice because Rebecca and Dave aren't, they haven't seen the show. And, you know, this gives JR and I the freedom to just, you know, do something that we don't have to wait on anyone else to watch. We've seen it and we love it. And we can kind of deliver an episode to probably our biggest audience on here, which is sort of the Japanese hero kaiju monster community. So here you go. Here we go. JR, why don't you take the first episode?
All right. So the first episode is Welcome to the Secret Base. And in this episode, we are introduced to the main character, Riku, and his friend. You might have to help me out here. I don't know what type of alien he is, but his name is Pega.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, you got it right.
basically, we get some glimpses of Riku acting uncharacteristically human. Like, he's able to jump higher. He's able to, like, withstand some thrashings when he hits his head or something like that. And when a giant kaiju comes and destroys his work/apartment, he's left kind of homeless. So he and Pega go out and are like, hey, let's just kind of camp under the stars. And a robotic part of a ship comes in and is like, hey, guess what? I'm going to take your DNA and you have something called the B factor. You're now in command of the ship. The ship brings him down, introduces him to the Geed Riser, and he becomes Geed for the first time. Like I said in the intro, this has to be, like, from the get-go, one of my favorite tokusatsu episodes ever. And yes, I am including that above Power Rangers.
Wow. Wow.
Well, I mean, like you said earlier, when you were trying to describe Ultraman to me, it's basically a grown-up Power Rangers.
I think there are some more mature themes in Ultraman. It's definitely still geared at kids. I mean, there's a very, you can tell where the Bandai mandates are.
No, definitely.
You know, we got to come up with these capsules to sell to kids and stuff like that, which, okay, I get it. It's a kids show.
Yeah. I mean, if they sell it, I'll buy it. And I did.
This is true. You did. I was in shock when I saw that.
I definitely don't have a fusion riser in my room. I definitely haven't tried to turn in a Geed.
Yeah, I think. Okay, so automatically we're introduced to a very interesting premise here, where we have someone who is an Ultraman who doesn't know that they're an Ultraman, who doesn't know that they're an alien, essentially, right? The one of the most powerful alien warriors in the universe, who, you know, is, you know, given this gift, revealed that he has this power, that he is this power. And what's interesting about that is that he jumps right into it. He's not reluctant at all.
No. He's not really.
He jumps right into it. And part of it is because of his fascination. I think you forgot to mention that Riku, he's a tokusatsu fan.
Yeah.
He loves Japanese heroes and stuff like that. He watched a TV show.
He's a kid at heart who loves the over-the-top Power Ranger-esque tokusatsu. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like a fictional tokusatsu in the world of G that he watches. He's real excited about, you know, being a superhero because he's grown up watching this stuff. And part of me wonders, you know, they don't exactly go into it, and I don't think they have to go into it, but it's kind of interesting that he is an Ultraman. He grows up not knowing that he's an Ultra Warrior.
Mm-hmm.
But he gravitates toward television and media with that similar kind of feel, you know?
He looks at the world through everybody's good, everybody's kind.
And he'll
defend the people that he needs to defend.
Right. So he's an Ultraman at heart. He knows deep down what he wants to be. He wants to be his hero. And, you know, as soon as it's revealed to him, he jumps right into it. And then at the tail end of the episode, after he defeats Skull Gamora, at the tail end of the episode, we have the revelation that he is the son of Ultraman Belial. And Ultraman Belial is kind of like the big baddie of the Ultraman series. We've had two movies and other subsequent appearances of this guy who is all about just ruining Ultraman's lives.
And he's and the jock at the party that comes in and yells party foul.
He is the party foul. He's and I thought it was a great cliffhanger. I thought it was like, okay, we have a show, we have a premise, we have an interesting character with an interesting premise, and we also have characters kind of on the sidelines, kind of dangling that we haven't really met yet, but are about to be, you know, entwined in Riku's world. And I thought it was a great first episode. I mean, it hooked me, and apparently it was enough to hook you as well.
Yeah. Oh gosh. Well, you know, this is just recapping the first episode. The question I wanted to ask you is, why did you think that this would be the series to hook me into Ultraman?
Well, again, I thought, because Koichi Sakamoto was part of it. I mean, we've already established these first four episodes he directed. that would be a big draw because his style toward action and the way he moves the camera around the action and whatnot is very Super Sentai-esque. It's very Power Rangers-esque. And I just felt that his style of storytelling kind of reflected that as well.
Okay.
I mean, if you think about it, you have all these characters on the outside that eventually come together as this team. And then look at, say, Kyurusha, for example. You know, they don't start out as a team. They're all kind of on the sidelines doing their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then they slowly come together as this team that helps each other out against this, you know, great grand threat. And Jeed is the same way. You have all these supporting characters that eventually come together that we'll talk about in just a second here, almost by episode, right?
Yeah.
We have Leia, we have Moa, we have, I don't think he's in this episode. What's his name? Who Ultraman Zero eventually bonds with.
Oh, what is his name?
Igigiri.
Yeah, Irigiri.
And you know, they all will have their own episodes to kind of explain where they're coming from and eventually linking up with Riku.
Okay.
And that's very Super Sentai.
Well, yeah, because I get all that. But honestly, if you ask me why I thought you sent this to me, I see a lot of myself in Riku.
All right.
I see like the line that always makes me tear up is actually in the second episode, which we'll get to. But I see a lot of that, like, because that's how I grew up, with the Power Rangers and the superheroes. And I'm one of those people that, yeah, if I had the ability to help people, I would. And I think that's what everybody, I mean, even if you don't have superpowers, obviously, but everybody should be watching out for each other. Everybody should have each other's back. And I'm one of those people that tend to hope to see the best of the world instead of everybody just, you know, walking over your face.
Well, this makes me gravitate more toward Ultraman Belial. I can kind of see where he's coming from more than me.
Don't get me wrong. I have my Belial. All right.
I totally get where Ultraman Belial is coming from.
I have a customer come up to me and be like, hey, do you know where this is? I'm like, destroy everything.
All right, well, let's move on to episode two here. Episode two is called The Girl Who Cuts Monsters. And this is kind of what I was talking about, how we, you know, we have episodes with supporting characters slowly kind of being reeled into Riku's world here. And in this episode, we have Riku kind of questioning, you know, whether or not he should be using his powers, his Ultraman powers, because a lot of people notice that Gide, or is mistaking Gide for Belial, who supposedly attacked years and years and years ago. And in the meantime, we have Leha, who carries around this sword and is going after aliens, because why not?
Tommy trying to take out the big monster without morphing.
Without morphing, right, yeah. No. But she can't even morph, which makes her even more...
more of a badass, you
know,
yeah.
Alpha, yeah, no, it's great. So we have some hesitation here from Riku. We have an immediate character moment from Riku. He's not sure he wants to be branded as a possible enemy of the public because of the way his Ultraman form looks.
Yeah, he even sends out like a letter to the press that says, my name is G and I'm here to help.
Yeah, so... you know, we have that going on. When we meet Lynx up with Leha, do you think, you know, watching her courage kind of helped him decide that this was what he needs to do? Because there's this moment where he thinks Pega is holding him from running away. And he's like, don't do that. He's like, I'm not doing anything.
That's the part that makes me tear up. He's like, let go of me.
I
love that part. Yeah,
oh, I love that, like, let go of me.
Let go of me. I'm not holding you. He's like, this must be what you want to do. I love that part.
Because we already established in the first episode that he is not reluctant. He's like, yeah, I'm a superhero. Let's do this. I want all the chicks. And he's...
we're the ultra babes.
He's all about that life, but he's a little hesitant about... terrifying people and making people think that, you know, he's the enemy,
right?
Which is a little, you know, do you think there's a little selfishness in that? And that should you even care if what people are saying to you, if you're doing the right thing anyway? And in the end, does he?
Right. There's a whole, like, there's a lot to this episode to dissect, because even the little girl that has the little star in her, there's a whole,
yeah.
The fact that when he's fighting the kaiju and he's obviously getting his butt kicked, the little girl starts praying. Like, there's a whole different side effect to this episode that we could drive into about like how she starts praying, not necessarily to Gide, but she starts praying for help. I don't know.
Right. I love her prayer, because in a lot of cases in anime and tokusatsu and whatnot, there's moments where, like, the prayer a little too literally, you know, saves the day.
Yeah.
You know, have you ever seen that meme where it's like villain who's trained for 1,000 years, you know, the power of friendship and memories defeats him, or something like that. It's like,
it's so true.
It's, you know, it wasn't so much that her prayer had a little too much of a literal effect on it, but she did pray. And in that moment, you know, she did make a comeback.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we can sit here and we can look at it and we can actually have discussion. Well, did her prayer work? Was it just coincidence?
Mm-hmm.
I think there's, you know, I really enjoy that kind of ambiguity to it. Because, I mean, Tsuburaya, when he invented Ultraman back in the 60s. I mean, he was Catholic. His successor was supposedly Catholic as well. And there was a whole lot of Judeo-Christian metaphors and symbolism sprinkled throughout the Ultraman series that persists today. But not to be too overt with it, I like moments like that where you can sit there and you can discuss, you know, the childlike faith of a human being praying, mm-hmm. and then their hero, you know, suddenly winning the battle.
Right.
Right.
But like you were saying earlier, it's not by her prayer that he gets some like magical upgrade or something like that.
Yeah. Power boost.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that it also, I guess we should also touch on the little star thing and where they come from.
Yeah. Might be a little important.
Yeah, I know. Okay, so the little stars are what, remnants of Ultraman King, right?
Yeah. So if I remember correctly, when Belial almost destroyed the universe, Ultra King basically sacrificed himself to save the Earth, and what was left over of his essence transformed into these little stars, which are basically just remnants of the king. And they give off superpowers, apparently.
Yeah, because why not?
Because plot points.
Right, right.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. It's tokusatsu.
Yeah, I had a friend, a colleague who once said that the bizarre weirdness of tokusatsu, of just the things that happen because they just do, is kind of also what makes a lot of these movies and shows kind of these unsung masterpieces. Because you look at at so many other decades and cultures going through eras in film, you have German expressionism, you have French, well, I don't even want to go into French cinema.
Please, we did enough of that in college.
The point is that there's so many weird things that don't add up in very mainstream blockbuster-y movies and television stories. And the filmmakers and crew, they know this. They're aware of it, but it adds to that kind of uniqueness that helps define this particular style and this particular genre.
Right.
And I really appreciate that kind of, you know, throw caution to the wind that it has. So anyway, you want to lead episode 3 for us?
So yeah. Episode 3 is called Salaryman Zero. And it might be, out of these first 5 episodes, might be one of the most comical episodes I've ever seen.
Oh, it is.
It's hysterical.
It's got to be. His dude literally slips on a banana peel. I mean.
But, all right. So, I would like to say a lot really happens in this episode, but it's kind of just also a recap of what we already know. Zero comes to Earth, and he finally arrives, and he's beat down from battle. So he knows he has to fuse with a human to re-heal himself and get energy again. Well, he spots this businessman, this weak, pathetic-looking businessman who tries to save a kid during a battle with between Jeed and another kaiju. And while he's running across the street to save this little kid very heroically, very out of character from him, he slips on a banana peel and dies. I shouldn't be laughing at this. I really shouldn't.
No, it's a lit because you know what's going to happen.
He slips on the banana peel and dies because he gets hit by a car. I mean, yes, it's awful, but it's also really comical. But Zero realizes this is the heroic action of this man, and he he chooses to become one with him so he can so the man can come back to life and Zero can heal himself. And through this event, we get the most comical thing out of this entire series. This switching between Zero and what was his name? Irigawa?
Igiguri. You're throwing me off.
Igiguri. Which is transpired through a dramatic pulling off of the glasses every single time
Zero
comes on frame.
Okay. Can we take a moment here to marvel at this? Okay, so Igiguri, he's played by Yuta Ozawa. Okay. And he has been I can't think of a whole lot that he's been part of, but he does an outstanding job here playing two characters, because he plays this kind of dorky little scared, definitely not the typical heroic salaryman who's just trying to get by, make a little money for his family, and you know, he just wants to be left alone.
This man deserves an Academy Award. He deserves all of them.
And then when Zero is talking to him, he takes his glasses off, as you say, very dramatically. And the actor Ozawa completely switches over. He furrows his brow. He looks very serious. He has a very chiseled look to him when he does it too.
When he takes off the glasses, you can literally see the transformation.
It's impressive. Oh. It's really impressive what he does. And every time he's on screen in the show, I am in awe of how quickly he switches between Igiguri and Zero.
Right? Like the
they both inhabit the same body right now. And I think that's something we probably should explain, is that Ultraman typically it's not so much that people turn into Ultraman, it's that Ultraman bonds with a person and then they both kind of inhabit the same body, whichever body that is, whether it be the human host or the Ultraman form.
Yeah, me being a noob, that took forever for me to realize. Because, I mean, like, even in X, it's different. Because X, he doesn't inhabit a body, he inhabits a piece of software.
Well, that software is X, though. But I get what you're... Yeah.
Yeah. Going back to, the transformation, I gotta say, the first time I saw that, where he's about to get, the crap beat out of him, and Zero takes over, and the dude starts breakdance fighting.
I was like, what?
I did not see this coming.
Doesn't Zero say, hey, do you mind if I take over for a bit? Just
can I drive? And then I love his ending tagline in that fight. If you want to pick a fight with me, try again in 20,000 years.
Well, you know who's voicing Zero, though, right?
Who is it?
Okay, so it's Mamoru Miyano. And I'm going to go through a list of things here. He's encompassed roles that we both really enjoy, JR. Riku from Kingdom Hearts.
Okay.
Light Yagami.
Oh, Death Note.
Death Note. One of your favorites, Ling Yao from Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood.
Oh my gosh, that is him.
He's also the Death Ruger, the Spinosaurus Kyuruger in Kyuruger.
Dude!
Here's
busy.
Here's the one. You ready?
Yeah.
Setsuna F. Seiei.
You're kidding me.
Gundam 00, which is one of our favorite series. We watched that show together, didn't we?
We watched every episode except maybe two episodes together.
Yeah.
If any of our listeners haven't watched Gundam 00, what are you doing? Finish this podcast and then go get 00.
But yeah, that's he's Ultraman Zero.
That's insane. That's
the voice of Ultraman Zero. And he's been the voice of Ultraman Zero since the first movie that Zero appeared in.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So they must do a dub over when that he switches.
I haven't noticed that, and I need to be paying more attention to that now. When we do the next five episodes, I really do need to pay attention to that. Speaking of dub, actually, he played Peter Park in the Japanese dub of Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
No way.
I thought that was funny. Yeah.
No, that's awesome.
I like that.
That's all right. I need to pay attention to it more.
So, yeah, no, I really like this episode primarily for Iguri and the fact that Zero chose him. Mm-hmm. You know, Iguri is not the typical Ultraman host. In the past, the typical Ultraman hosts have always been a part of some squadron of special monster fighters or, you know, an action hero of some sort. This guy slipped on a banana peel trying to do the right thing and got hit by a car.
Yeah, that's another thing that I was talking about earlier. The expectation.
Yes. Subverting expectation. Yeah.
Because, you know, Riku is just this kid who works at a convenience store. And Irigawa is just a businessman. They don't know about these fighting. Like, they don't know what the first thing they're doing.
No.
And
not at all.
It, like I said, I'm still very new to Ultraman. I've gone through like three or four series. But like you said, they're all like part of some kind of monster hunting squad, or they're trying to figure out kaiju and how they can work for them. You know, they're very military-esque fighters.
Typically.
Yeah.
The ones that bond with Ultraman. Yeah, yeah. Typically.
So yeah,
like Ultraman X was part of a squadron that fought monsters.
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, he bonded with Ultraman X.
So that's just another reason to like add on why I love this series so much.
Mm-hmm. I have to agree. This is one of my favorite episodes, honestly, because I love Ultraman Zero for one, but I really, really appreciate Iguri here and how he was implemented and introduced, and how Ultraman Zero, this sort of, you know, the Ultra Warriors are kind of this symbol of hope and all that is good and just, the very godlike, omnipotent characters. And the fact that he saw something in Iguri, who, you know, everyone else just sees this timid little nerd, really does speak volumes to me. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate that Zero found something worth bonding in that. It really does say a lot, and it says a whole lot to the Ultraman series, and also about those themes we talked about. It's not so much that I think Ultraman is a little more adult, but I do think that the themes in Ultraman are a little more thought-provoking than
a lot more some worthy of what we've seen. Conversation.
Yeah, more worthy of conversation. And I hate saying that, because I do think there's some great Super Sentai out there, but I do think there's more to think about mm-hmm. here than in most of the Super Sentai that I've seen.
Yeah.
I'll put it that way.
Yeah. Last little note on this episode, because Gide now gets two little stars, we see a brand new upgrade for Gide. And
oh, I forgot about this.
By far one of my favorites and most sexy armored plated Gs out there.
Solid burning. Yeah.
And I love the way this, like, when he first dons it and like everything clicks into place, like armor. Mm-hmm. And like, once it clicks it steams off. It's so sexy.
Yeah, I appreciated the almost Pacific Rimness.
Well, you know, that's like, you know, that's one thing I noticed when I was going back and rewatching that. He even does the fist rocket. Like, he pulls back his fists, and like the tip of it ignites and it just thrusts forward into the face. I was like,
He does it with his leg too, doesn't he? No, he puts the blade on his leg and the jet goes off and he he kick slices.
Which is awesome because he does that in the next episode, but he attaches it to the end of his arm.
Yeah.
So, like, if Zed wanted to just pull out multiples of that, you could turn him into a slash or something.
Yeah, this is definitely one of my favorite forms as well. And Ultraman Leo, I'm a big fan of. Anyway, yeah, I enjoyed this one. Moving on to episode 4, I guess I'll take this one. A job where you investigate aliens. And this is the last one directed by Koichi Sakamoto for this particular disc. And this one follows there is a monster hunting organization in this universe, but they're called the AIB.
Huh.
Alien Investigation Bureau.
Huh.
And
it does not MIB at all.
No.
Oh, because that would be copyright.
And it follows Riku's childhood friend Moa, who I have mixed feelings on. This was actually probably my least favorite episode of the 5 on this disc, JR. And I think in part because, you know, Laya's such a strong character. She goes off and says, "Oh, you're an alien? That's weird. I'm going to hit you with my sword." And now Mo is part of this organization, right?
Yeah.
That where she should be trained to, you know,
combat aliens.
Combat aliens and have thicker skin and whatnot. But she just acts like a very, she's just a little whiny baby.
She's a very,
I'm not,
What's the word I'm looking for? They describe just stereotypical Japanese fangirls. What's the word I'm looking for? I can't think of it. But
I'm just thinking weak, piddling.
Yeah,
girl who cries because she got knocked on her butt. I don't know. I was not very impressed with the Moa character. I found the Moa character, I found it a lazy way to differentiate her from Leia.
Yeah, I mean,
you know,
the only thing like like we talk about with Riku in this episode is we can kind of see where Riku's heart and upbringing come from, because they say that this is a kid. Riku was pretty much raised by this random family, and Moa being his quote unquote sister. We can see where his like heart and caring and all that comes from, but because even she grew up watching these Super Sentai, if you will. So,
oh, I didn't think about that.
Yeah,
I didn't think about that. Because so every time they see each
other,
her.
Yeah, every time they see each other, they do that like finishing move.
Oh, they do, don't they?
Yeah.
So that likely helped inspire her to join the Alien Investigation Bureau.
Right.
Okay.
No. So, I mean, I agree with you. Moa's a little, you know, I take that back. She's a lot.
Well, I just think the only two ways to differentiate female characters is to have a strong one and a not so strong one.
One that kind of like just very forgetful, very like, oopsie daisy.
Bubbly.
Yes.
Oh yeah, my gosh. Overtly, annoyingly bubbly. Yeah, and the fawning over Riku.
Right.
I kind of take issue.
What is... We need to talk about this, okay?
Okay,
this makes
right.
me legitimately angry. She's like, oh, he's like a brother to me. But as soon as she sees him with another girl, she's like, how dare you pay attention to anybody but me? That just annoys me. Like, you guys are, like, literally siblings.
I think this episode broke you.
It might have.
You know what, though? A lot of people have that same issue with Barry and Iris in The Flash.
I mean, the only difference is Barry felt that way back.
And that's been my argument as well. But I...
Like, if I grew up with somebody and then later on she ended up having feelings like this for me, I'd be like, No.
Well, and it's just unfortunate because I think there are more complex ways to write the women in Ultraman. I think Ultraman X probably did a better, one of the best jobs of that in recent years. And it's just unfortunate that Sakamoto takes a very stereotypical approach here. I think the most interesting thing about MOA is how it is what she's involved in, the AIB, and the fact that she has to keep a secret from Riku, and the fact that Riku is keeping a secret from her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they both have this relationship, but they're both holding back very pertinent information. Riku's an alien.
Yeah.
And she's hunting down aliens who shouldn't be there and then kicking them back across the border. Which is another thing we could get into here. There's a lot of there's a conversation of about, okay, the AIB's job really isn't that much different from the MIB's job. Which really isn't that much different from police officers, border patrol in reality.
Right.
And of course, coming, you know, because Japan's involved, people immediately want to jump to the, you know, xenophobic mm-hmm. comparisons here. Okay, maybe, I don't know, but I it seems like there's more to that as well. It seems like the AIB is also trying to keep some sort of order for the aliens that are there, you know, not doing illegal stuff.
Right, which is, I mean, we kind of see the flaw, a kink in the chain in this episode where the alien they're after is like, well, I had plans on conquering the Earth, but I kind of grew to like it. And
right,
it's like, okay, what do we do in this situation, you know? And it happens in the next episode as well.
It's almost like the AIB keeps getting proven like there's issues with the way they handle things. And in an age where law enforcement has been challenged, these
very nice way
these episodes.
It.
Yeah. Yeah, no. These episodes are kind of interesting to watch, interesting to look at, especially for a kid's show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I think there's a lot to discuss regarding the AIB and how they handle things. But I think also the show is sort of maybe possibly tilting at a windmill here that perhaps the law enforcement can be adjusted.
Yeah, like there's no, I mean, like you said, there's a discussion to be had here about, you know, nowadays, but like, you know, there's no mm-hmm. right and wrong when it comes right or wrong. There's a gray line when it comes to some certain situations. So yeah. Before we get into a very deep conversation about politics and
that, well, that's fine though.
Yeah.
You know, that's fine. Yeah, I mean, it's what these shows are here for. You know, I've always said that the monsters and the heroes in tokusatsu and kaiju are, you know, are supposed to say something about us.
Right.
And which is why I think people who say, oh, well, I want a Godzilla movie without humans in it. Well, that kind of defeats the purpose because then it's about nothing.
Right. It's literally Kong versus Godzilla.
Yes. and yeah. And so there's a socio-political discussion to be had here, and I think the points it is raising are interesting to dive into, but I also know that you want to get into Ultraman's latest form here as well.
Oh, burning?
No. Isn't this
no this that's is the next the episode. I will comment how burning is awesome in this episode though. Yeah, the blade on the wrist. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love it.
Can
put the blades on like his arms and his legs. I'm like, okay, that's a helpful.
Why don't I have more of these? No, the one thing I actually did like about this episode, besides, you know, the gray area of the border, let's say, is how, you know, this this alien raised what is the
Elking?
Elking, yes. Raised the Elking and
Elking.
Elking.
I'm not sure how to pronounce it. It's either Elking or Elking.
Yeah, I think it's Elking. But raised it from baby, and just, I mean, I don't know why she said just put him out of its misery. I don't know if he was being like manipulated. I didn't think he was, but I thought maybe it had some kind of deeper meaning to it. Like she thought maybe killing it would be better than a life of captivity. I don't know. It was a very kind of slightly heart-wrenching plead. It was, it's like saying goodbye to a good pet, good friend. You don't want to see it suffer. So it was a very, without being too harsh, it was a very tender moment.
Do you think this episode might have benefited from the next form that she takes on
in order
to save Elking?
I think it would have, because the next episode is probably the most confusing for me.
Okay. Well, let's get into that.
Yeah. Yeah. Since I did the last episode, would you take the honors?
No, I did the last
episode. Oh, yeah. It's my turn.
Yeah, I did the last episode.
I'm an idiot. Your turn. So the next episode is called Partners. And the team has started hunting down the Infinity Stones, and
okay,
and they come across
I like that
they come across a comedian who could supposedly heal people. They come to find out that the healing stone, the Little Star, is actually inhabited in an animal named Moku, and Moku is the one doing the healing. Now, the controversy here comes with, we're talking about like Border Patrol and all that, is this is not a dog or a cat, it's an alien. So, but obviously it's a dog. You know, this leads into that conversation we are having, you asked G about, would this episode have benefited from Geed's form that he takes in this one, which is it Aqua? Ultraman Geed Aqua?
No, it's Ultraman Geed Acro Smasher.
Acro Smasher, which seems to have the ability to heal instead of destroy.
And it's also it to calm.
Yes.
It calms monsters down and kind of, which is, I believe, and I haven't seen this one, a ability of Ultraman Cosmos.
Yeah, because Zero points it out. Yeah. So with the like, if I feel like if they had replaced forms in the episodes, this one would have made more sense for Acro Smasher, because you know you're not killing a pet, you're, you know, giving it another reason to calm down and live. Whereas in this episode, when the monster's after Little Star, he's just like, oh, hey, dude, chill out. Go back to sleep. Mm-hmm. Everything's cool. I would have preferred that to happen in the last episode.
Yeah, I think, I mean, in the last episode, maybe it was more emotional because he didn't have the Acro Smasher form to calm down Elking, and he had no choice.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be kind of interesting if they went back and be like, man, if only I had the Acro Smasher before I
killed
Elking. But yeah, I it would have been an interesting switch up, especially considering how comedic this episode is.
This is probably, whereas the last episode wasn't my favorite, this is probably a second runner up. It's a very comical episode, and like you said, you know, they still try to appeal to kids. It is very much a kid show. So I can see where the kid aspect comes in this episode. It's It's not one of my top five.
Oh, definitely not for me either, but I love the Moco.
Oh, Moco's adorable. Creature. What kind of animal is it then? It's obvious.
Oh.
It's a dog.
I mean, it's literally a tribble with like eyes, ears, and a tail.
It's a tribble cat.
And I love when like that one scene where he like feeds him a burger or something like that.
It's
like the bunny from Monty Python suddenly.
It's like that one SNL skit. Chris Farley.
These fangs show up.
Oh man, I'm starving. Another thing about this episode, we talked about, you know, the AIB and Moa. Why did I say Moa?
Moku.
No. Yeah, Moa. His sister.
Oh, his sister girl.
Yeah, his sister girl.
His girlfriend sister.
You know, the one they took best together.
This show takes place in southern Japan, just to clarify. We just want to...
In the next episode, you actually start to hear banjos. You know,
I'm already in Georgia, man. We don't need any more of that.
you know, we were talking about her lying to Riku about her job as an insurance salesman. And now, you know, constantly having to make up new lies. And in this one, she's Department of Health. And, you know, he starts to see the veil get lifted with her. And he starts to, you know, I mean, he's not the brightest bulb in a box himself.
Riku? Oh, no, absolutely not.
But, you know, he starts questioning what she's actually doing, realizing she's not being totally honest with him either, which, you know, will come back to bite her. But
really, comes back to bite them both, if I recall.
We'll have to see in the next disc.
On the
next time on the Drift Space.
On the Drift Space bonus. And I guess that, you know, this would be a kind of a good place to talk about, you know, what we plan on doing next with these bonus episodes. Obviously, we don't want to just stop short with Ultraman Jeed. We want to talk more about Ultraman Jeed. What are we going to do with these type of episodes, these sort of bonus episodes? Are more coming? The short answer is yes. How?
Undecided.
Yeah, we haven't decided. And it's not just going to be me and JR. Some episodes might be Rebecca and Dave. Some episodes might be Dave and JR. Some episodes might be me and Rebecca. We don't know. They're going to be more niche topics that not all of us can participate in. And how we release them, we haven't decided yet. But we do want to do them. We do hope to do them and plan on doing them. What we know for certain is that regular episodes will continue with all four of us.
Right.
That's a given.
This is just kind of our way of saying we were sorry for missing a date. We promise that won't happen too much often. But we also wanted
to... Don't promise never again.
Yeah,
don't
we're promise not promising it won't ever never happen. Again. We all have lives. But... this is just a way to wet your tongue, wet your appetite about, you know, future things that might be happening.
Wet your tongue.
Yes, wet your tongue. Future things that might be happening at the Drift Space.
JR, I would let you wet my tongue.
I let everybody wet my tongue. I hold a sign out in the middle of the parking lot at work, and I said, please wet my tongue. I don't attract a lot of people. And in fact, people kind of avoid me. Like, you know, it's like that stray dog walking down the street. You're like,
that's because
I would feel safer if I was on the other side of the street. So you deliberately go out of your way to cross the street so you don't have to walk past that dog.
That's because you're not wearing pants when you're holding the sign, brother.
I can't make everybody happy. Okay. I gotta do me.
You're doing you. all right. So, because this is a bonus episode, we're not doing a Fanboy 50. We're not doing a poorly pitched. So I think we're just going to sign off here.
I still gotta figure out what day's poorly pitched was. I think I know it. I just gotta. It's aggravating me.
Well, we got a few more days.
That's true.
Before we record Mortal Kombat, so.
Mortal Kombat!
We'll get there. Make sure you listen to our next full episode. We'll be covering Mortal Kombat on that show. And meantime, you can find me on Twitter at GmanMysterioid, and you can check out my new Substack called Deferential Wrath of a Rusting Markalite Cannon.
Stop
at markalite.substack.com. Enough. The joke has passed.
It's not new anymore. You've been pitching this thing for like five episodes, or longer than five episodes. It's not new.
Fair enough. It's just not a Substack. New Substack, but it is a Substack.
It is a Substack. I won't pound you on, oh, fake news. And I'm JR.
That's Dave's job.
And it lives, apparently. And I'm JR. If you like me ranting about just nerdy culture in general, you can find me on Twitter at littleman_says1. And I'm also doing cosplays over on my Instagram at littlemancosplay.
If you want to check out our friends, Dave, he does a geek pod with his wife called Pizza and Parsecs. And Rebecca, you can check out her artwork at bit.ly/rebhudge. And that's all, folks. Thanks for playing along. You can take a look at our show at bit.ly/TDSlinks. Make sure you review our show on iTunes. And you can find us on our socials at The Drift Space. We'd love to hear from you. Give us a ring. We'll chat with you for a little bit over the phone.
Yeah.
Over the corded phone.
We'll sit on our bed, kick our feet, you know. Like they did in the 80s movies where, like, oh my god, he's so cute.
That's what I was
cute.
About to go there. I'll be wearing an oversized sweatshirt.
Oh, I see. I was picturing you with, like, not suspenders. Jeans.
Corduroys.
Overalls.
Yeah.
And
corduroys,
yes. And, like, braided pigtails.
Corduroy.
Just twirling your finger in the cord line, just being like, oh my god, he is so cute.
Thanks for listening to our bonus episode on Ultraman G, the first five episodes anyway. We hope to do more. Make sure you check out our next episode on Mortal Kombat, and remember, always stay strapped. Take care, guys.
Later.
So what's next, JR? What are we doing? What are we doing here?
What
are we doing here?
Well, I would like to strip down and go to...